we're back. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And this is Canadian Day, Canada Day plus one, I guess. And we're joined, I think, by Montreal publisher Maraca Books, Robin Philpott. Are you there, Robin?
Hi, Phil. How are you doing?
It's really good to be talking to you because it's always time to reflect Canada Day and decide where we are as a country and the origins of the country, et cetera. And I read a Globe and Mail piece on the weekend saying that Canada is, you know, they wanted to explain the sort of the historical difference. As you know, the starting point often is with the United States. So it's how we're different from 1776 is not 1867. But I thought there was a curious detail that I wasn't uncomfortable with the editorial until they said that it's a project that began towards independence in 1867, and it's been evolving and reached completion independence in 1982 with the patriation of the Constitution. I guess that's the word. I don't remember that as being an entirely happy moment for everybody. And you live in Quebec, and the oldest issue of this country is the history in North America and British history. And then there's our friends, the Americans, who were British. And I may as well throw the Spanish in while I'm at it. We've evolved into kind of interesting political problems that started with the empires, right? Would you agree that 1982 was the resolution of the matter?
Nothing was resolved. You might say it was more of the same because, you know, it's amazing that Canadians are like the way that this all happened is it's a story of cultural appropriation. There we go, a term that's very popular these days.
That's a popular term.
Yeah. You know, it starts with the very name of the country. And I was reading about it, and there were a number of commentaries on this question in the Quebec newspapers that cultural appropriation, starting with the name and the national anthem. And just to get an idea of it, but, you know, the term they wanted to use was British North America. You know, they celebrate the BNA Act of 1867. That's July 1st. BNA, British North America Act, as British West Indies, British West Africa. It was a British colony, you know, British East Indies. It was like this empire.
The magic word was British.
And they wanted to have the name British North America. They often talked about the kingdom of New Britain, but with the presence of a republic to the south, led them to choose a name which was similar to kingdom, the word dominion, and it became the Dominion of Canada, which was almost, it was despite themselves that they used the term, because the whole term Canada and Canadian meant the original, the people who had lived and were born and had descended and mixed with the native populations who inhabited the Valley of the St. Lawrence from the 1600s. The term Canadian, or Canadien, as it's done in French, was a term which distinguished people living who were born and raised who had become somewhat indigenous to North America. The French used the term Canadian to distinguish them, this sort of peasant mixed half-breed population which had settled in North America, and in France, to distinguish themselves, the French noblemen, the French, from the population that was living here, who in fact were the population remained when the British took over after 1760. It was basically this population who had laid down roots and were not, they weren't French. Because they'd already broken for over, you know, 150 years. It'd been, you know, it doesn't take long for generations to actually adapt and live in it, like the Americans, you know, have done in a similar period. And so the term Canada, and when John A. Macdonald, who is the man that called one of the fathers of Confederation, was meeting in 64, and there was real pressure to federate the British colonies. They use the term Confederation, but it's federate the British colonies. And it was, he was in Halifax, and if you'd like, I can just quote what he said. He said, with the Federation, we shall have taken a great step in advance of the American Republic. If we can obtain that object, a vigorous general government, we shall not be New Brunswickers, nor Nova Scotians, nor Canadians meaning the population, the Canadiens, but British Americans under the sway of the British sovereign. And his ambition, and he stated it as this, he said, his ambition was to be a subject of a great British American nation under the government of Her Majesty and in connection with the Empire of Great Britain and Ireland. So that is what people are celebrating with July 1st. And it is not surprising that Quebecers are not happy with it because, you know, that was not an event which was a liberation. It was sort of like a compromise 20 or 30 years after a brutal repression of the rebellions by Papineau and Mackenzie.
Yeah, by the way, the Globe and Mail left that part out because they wanted to, the writer gave himself the problem of explaining that we're very passive people and we never have any, we always compromise. So yeah. He decided not to mention 1837.
Yeah, where they, in fact,
William,
where they had...
William Lyon Mackenzie or... Papineau, no.
Papineau, and they'd hanged many of the rebels. And they deported them to...
The hanging sounds violent to me. I don't know about you. It sounds violent.
It does. And people mark it here. But, you know, and one of the other fathers of Confederation was George Brown, who was the founder of the Globe and Mail, by the way. Torontonian.
Yeah, he'd be proud of that editorial.
Yeah, and he wrote in a letter to his wife after the Charlottetown Conference, which is often celebrated. And here I'll quote it to you because I was collecting this. The conference is through at 6 o'clock this evening, he writes to his wife. Constitution adopted, a most credible document, a complete reform of all the abuses and injustice we have been complained of. Is it not wonderful? The old French domination is entirely extinguished. Hooray. And this was the end of French Canadianism. You know,
hooray. How eloquent.
Yeah, hooray. And basically, it's a glorification of empire,
mm-hmm.
and so when you say, well, in 1982 we've solved the thing. Well, the Constitution was a British North America Act. It is still British North America, and mm-hmm. the only way you could become independent was to have an agreement between the so-called federal states, and that's one thing that did not happen in 1982. There was no agreement.
Oh, yes. By the way, very important point. Could you underline that? Because I recall, and it's worth remembering, that when they, this thing about, you know, the adoration for the crown and the royal system and all that, I recall that legally Quebec began to make arguments to the British authorities saying, well, we have an agreement with you that any change in that constitution will have to involve our acceptance of it,
right?
Our signature. But we had a prime minister who decided he could dispense with that.
Exactly.
And by the way, did the British wash their hands? How did they handle that? Because that was an awkward question for them.
It was. They were not at ease with it. And there was a very important book came out a few years ago, and it did come out in English, The Battle of London, in which it showed that the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Boral Askin, was over, and he was out there to decide whether, because Quebec went to the Supreme Court, and he was over lobbying for Trudeau. This is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court lobbying in England, which in London, in favor of Trudeau's patriation and Charter of Rights, which took away the jurisdiction, took away powers from the Quebec National Assembly, which were powers that theoretically had been granted under the famous British North America Act. So that is why Quebec remains a non-signatory of what the Globe and Mail hailed in the editorial today. That is, Quebec is not a signatory of that constitution, and no government, whether it's Liberal or Patrick-Québécois or another, is willing to sign that without reparations. You know, I mean, we're going back to something that happened in the 80s and 90s, where there was a lot of talk about these things, but people seem to forget, and they go along and as if nothing has changed, you know, because the it's almost the inertia of the status quo.
Yes.
But the question about cultural appropriation is, so the name is taken away. So Quebecers, and for a long time, people called themselves the Canadiens, and they knew who they're talking about. I mean, they're 400 years of living here, mixing with the population, and so on. And traveling all over North America, and you know, there's pockets of this population who are Métis and everywhere, all across North America, and a lot in New England, which I can talk about shortly if you'd like. But the name has been taken away, but the national anthem as well, and it's worth reminding people that where does Old Canada come from? The song. First of all, the man who composed the music was a guy named Calixte Lavallée, who was he went and fought for the North in the Civil War, and then he was asked to compose a patriotic hymn, so that people would not have to sing "God Save the Queen," and this was in 1880, and it was the Société.
That was the object, so that they could have a song that was not guns. Is that? In other words, that was part of the purpose.
The
is that right?
Sorry?
That was, just to underline it, that was part of the purpose, was to have a song that was not a song about the throne.
Yeah, a song about the British throne. And so that was what they, and so it became, it was this rousing song with the glorifying, I mean, talking about the people who, where they came, you know, and they're talking about our forefathers, you know, that we're talking about people who've been, you know, who've been settled and created a community or live for almost 300 years then, and so that the song was never translated until 1907. They put in words that are, and Canada was a very nativist society then. You know, they liked to consider themselves northern peoples, and so that's where that verse is, the true North, strong and free, came from. That was nativist, because that is a very poor. They couldn't use the French translation, which said "land of our forefathers." So they said "true north, strong and free," because you see, and so the song right now has become an Anglo-Canadian national anthem that sometimes even gets booed in Toronto when it's sung in French. So you can see how the discomfort a lot of Quebecers and French-speaking Canadians outside of Quebec or elsewhere feel about July 1st. It's not something that is celebrated here.
Yeah.
And one thing, we've talked about this before, I think, but in, have things changed that much? You know, the 24th of May is still Victoria Day. Canada is the only place in the world, as far as I know, where you celebrate the Queen Victoria's birthday. An interesting thing. It's still celebrating empire, and the celebrations of the War of 1812, celebrating empire.
And by the way, there's a thread in that everybody should reflect on, because, of course, in the modern 20th century and now into the 21st, the ending of colonialism and the correction of all the injustices and improper way of doing business because of the system. When you tell us a story that, you know, that Victoria's birthday is marked in that way, it tells you psychologically, or they used to say subjectively, it's a problem.
Yeah.
because that's there's still this idea of, well, we have missionary work to do, you know.
Right, right.
We still have to correct everybody, make them.
Victoria is, was you know, Victoria was there at the height of empire. Mm-hmm. And the people are not saying this is important. You know, we want to change symbolism. You know, they want to remove names and so on. Well, you know, sometimes you have to go to the heart of things and say, what are we celebrating? Yes. Are we celebrating a monarchy? Or are we celebrating freedom, yeah, you know?
Well, certainly, yes. What kind of order do you wish to have?
There's another thing is the word Canadian. I was just reading about, you know, there was the first royal visit in here into Canada was Prince Albert, you know, Victoria's son. They used to call him Bertie. Mm-hmm. And he came here in 1860. And his recount of his visit, penned by somebody else, he said there was a time when the term Canadian, when the Canadian of French origin were the only people who were identified by the term Canadian, and he says you don't have to be very old to recall that his name was scorned by everybody else. In other words, call yourself a Canadian was perceived as being sort of like
the wrong class.
Half-bred French.
Yes,
you know, it was totally looked down upon.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the term slowly they took it away. It was a way of trying to keep the French-speaking.
By the way, that shows again too the complications of the empire itself, because. I think you say it was the prince, right?
Prince
title.
Albert.
I know reading about John A. The prince was here, and they went by boat. They were going to go to Kingston, but he wouldn't go into Kingston because the Orange Man demonstration was so large and so not hostile to him, but they wanted to embrace him as part of the anti-Catholic, anti-French point of view. And he was smart enough not to go. He said, I'm not going ashore.
Yeah.
They had a launch, and he said, no. And John A. had to agree. He couldn't go into Kingston.
Right.
Because
right.
of the caliber of the attitude of the demonstrations.
Yeah,
by the way, that has to be, somebody ought to mark that out as one of the most important visits in terms of telling the story of what was going on. At that time, 1860, Abraham Lincoln was running for president of the United States, and they asked him if he wanted to meet the prince, and he said he didn't think it was a good idea.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that. But
the Civil War had a lot to do with 1867.
Sure, of course it did. Of course.
We should underline that a tremendous upheaval, bloody, terrible war with 600,000 dead, fighting over the issue of slavery. And the British were, putting it this way, ambivalent about what they wanted to see happen.
Right.
When the war was over, there was a huge navy that hadn't been there before and a huge army that hadn't been there before.
Right.
And that's when they accelerated discussions about what ought to be done here.
Exactly. And as you know, we did a book on. Here, I'm a publisher, but if you allow me, a book on.
You're supposed to remind us you're a publisher, and we want to read your book. So, what's that book?
No, but the book about how the Confederates were wined and dined and hosted here in Montreal by the Anglo elite.
Yes, John Wilkes Booth came to Montreal.
John Wilkes Booth, among others, but the whole Secret Service and Jefferson Davis came here, and his mother-in-law is buried here in the Mount Royal Cemetery. And
yes, you used to have a plaque on the wall for Jefferson Davis. Has that been taken down, or is it still there?
It's been taken down. but a friend of mine was up in the Mount Royal Cemetery, and he said that here's his mother-in-law died here. Because they were here, they fled. He sent them up here. They were safe, and all their scheming and planning, and the assassination of Lincoln was planned in Montreal, and they were hosted. I mean, they controlled with the money and the help of the future mayor of Montreal, a guy named Henry Starnes, was the man who was funding them through the Ontario Bank Montreal branch.
Yes, when Wilkes Booth was found in Maryland, he had made money from the Ontario Bank in his pocket.
Yeah, and the man who signed that check was Henry Starnes, who became the mayor of Montreal after that, and was a very leading, close friend of John A. Macdonald's. And then another former future Prime Minister of Canada, John Abbott, was the lead in the St. Albans Raiders. Anyway, it's a dirty little history that
it's a backdrop to the establishment of the Confederation of 67. The question was how we can kind of keep the place together and not have a, because they didn't want a war here because they didn't think it would go well, the British.
Right.
And they, frankly, as a military problem, they told John A., we really cannot come over there, and we don't have the personnel to hold on to the place, so we're going to have to come up with a new idea.
Right. And one of the things that the Prince Albert did, and I was reading his speech and his speeches when he visited, is he was trying to cajole, treat with kid gloves the French-speaking population. He says, they've been so great and towards the Queen, and there's no signs of any republicanism among them, which is they basically killed all the Republicans and bought off the others, Georges-Étienne Cartier. So they were obviously concerned about losing this part, because republicanism was very, very strong in the 1830s here and 1840s. Right up to the 1850s, but little by little, there's a man who's written a very good book here about how some of these people who had actually been in the Patriot Rebellion got bought off.
Mm-hmm.
The Crown was very adept at buying them off. So
mm-hmm.
anyway, so the people in Quebec have a very
so that's why Canada Day is Moving Day in Montreal.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the slogan. Why did they move? Is it just the most convenient date? Is it still true?
Well, it used to be May 1st, and it was under Bourassa, Robert Bourassa, that it became a problem in schools, because they changed the date to July 1st. Of course, you know, in the 70s, July 1st was not a big day in Canada. It was Dominion Day, it was called. Mm-hmm. And the 60s and the 50s, there was no real celebration. It was under Pierre Trudeau where he wanted to try and undercut the Quebec's national holiday, which was the 24th of June. And by the way, the first time that O Canada was ever sung was on the 24th of June, 1880.
Saint Jean Baptiste.
Yeah, and which is interesting how you talk about cultural appropriation is that it was taken away and now it's almost for a lot of Quebecers, it's become its opposite,
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it was surrendered in that sense. They didn't.
Yeah.
It was not fought over. It just they had a song and they lost it.
Yeah, and it didn't.
So, now
it
the other
no
guys got
meant
the song.
What it used to mean for the rest of the population.
Well, this is Robin Philpott, publisher of Baraka Books.
I did mention that New England. There were over a million people left Quebec starting in the 1840s after the repression of the Patriots and went into New England between then and 1920, about more than a million people. That's where the Kerouac family.
That's where we lost Jack Kerouac to Massachusetts.
Right.
And he called himself a Quebecer, didn't he? He understood he was a Quebecer even though he lived in Massachusetts.
He also called himself a French Indian as well. I mean, but he knew all that stuff. But there were, and many of the people, they left, and it was the government at the time, when after 1867, they sort of overlooked it all. It was a loss of population, and the country needed population. But it actually meant that they were weakening the demographically, the French-speaking population in Canada, which is what they wanted to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of people who got quite upset and for all that time because they're losing masses of people to New England. And they crowded into tenements, and they basically became the counterpart to slaves and plantation workers who produced the cotton, and they were the ones. They were more than 50% of the workers in the New England.
Well, again, by the way, to speak in terms of empire, that is, of course, that was the experience of the Mexican American in the South,
right,
and the Southwest.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Where they had been an independent people, or people who desired independence. And then every name in the Southwest, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Jose, Santa Fe, they put those were names and churches and everything, and there they were suddenly under the boot.
Right, right. So I'm gonna plug another book. We've got this great book coming out in the fall. I think I sent you a copy. We had sent you a copy, but it's called A Distinct Alien Race, mm-hmm. The Untold Story of Franco-Americans. And the title, A Distinct Alien Race, comes from a quote from a leading Boston paper in the 1880s, complaining about the French taking over New England and eventually governing them.
And well, the great fear was it was also anti-Catholicism. They were afraid that there would be a Catholic majority. Americans, remind everybody, one Catholic president who was assassinated.
Right, exactly. And no, and they were thought it was American was a WASPy, it was very much a WASPy country then. Maybe it is still, I don't know, but and the Ku Klux Klan went after them very much in the 1920s.
Yes.
The French in New England in particular, and in some places in Canada, by the way. So, but this book is coming out in the fall. But once again, people with these backgrounds, they left there. They called themselves Canadiens, and they still call themselves that. But that for them, as they're leaving, that meant that they were French-speaking Canadians. You know, like Kerouac is the one we know the best. You know, So anyway, that's coming out. It's by a Franco-American third generation, David Vermette.
Well,
very, very serious.
I'm glad our discussion of Canada Day led to this interesting book, and we're very grateful. Robin Philpott, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Phil. Thanks for calling.
Yep. Bye-bye. This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. It's Canada Day Plus One. And by the way, you can find us on Facebook / The Taylor Report. We're on SoundCloud. Taylor-Report. If you're on SoundCloud, we have a hyphen on SoundCloud, and we are just The Taylor Report on Facebook, and you can listen to previous programs, and there's other material there. I want to say, I think we have important news from Mexico. They have elected a president named Obrador, and he leads a movement which is pay a lot of close attention to Mr. Obrador. He is an authentic socialist. And if people remember back for a decade or two, there's been an effort to keep alive the socialist programs and whatnot. And they used to meet, they met in all the big capitals. And one of the best names from the movement is Lula, who led Brazil for many years. He's probably the most beloved politician in Brazil. He is a close admirer and friend of Obrador. So Mr. Obrador is in for a ride, and maybe all the rest of us are too. He was the mayor of Mexico, and everyone agrees that he was the most honest, most gifted mayor of one of the greatest cities in the world. So I think we should be happy about. Canada is facing in New World. We hear about it. It's called trade wars. Well, in the trade wars, you want a strong friend. And in Mexico now, in Mr. Obrador, Canada will have a strong friend. The question is, how strong is Canada, I suppose? But he comes from a tradition that produced President Cardenas of so many years ago. President Cardenas was probably the most beloved president in the history of Mexico. He's the one who nationalized the oil fields, and the Americans almost invaded him for that. And in his last years of his life, he hosted a group of passionate Cuban patriots led by a young man named Fidel Castro. It was on the property of Mr. Cardenas that they used to meet. So it's a great tradition, and Obrador represents that tradition. So look for news from there. What I would urge people to do is find his speeches. Don't go to any middleman or anybody who wants to explain. Go straight to his speeches. Get them in. You can get them turned into English. No big trick with Google. And read every last word, and then you'll know whether you like him or you don't like him. Anyway, this is Phil Taylor for the Taylor Report. This is CIUT 89.5 FM, and remember, we are on SoundCloud, Taylor hyphen, and we're on Facebook, The Taylor Report. And I'm very grateful to Donald, who took us through this, and we'll see you next week.